Welcome to the ABC edition of Daytime Confidential, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, we discuss Reese and Bianca on All My Children, as well as the possible return of Robin Christopher. General Hospital is down in the ratings and at number 7, and a whole bunch about One Life to Live, all this and much more on today's show. We thank you for listening, so stay tuned. Welcome.
Hello.
Jamie, welcome.
Hello.
And TV Guide Canada's Nelson Branco, welcome.
Hello, people. How's it going?
Nelson, we have you here today because we want to talk about One Life to Live.
Well, I mean, this week, Todd and Marty have sex. Full-on sex, beginning, middle, end, ejaculation, they had sex. So they're not going to be interrupted, passion style, or anything like that. They're going to do it. I'm surprisingly not upset. Like, I'm actually quite surprised about my reaction. I guess it's because I stopped caring a couple weeks ago, so, and I fast-forward through the majority of their scenes. So to me, it's just like a farce. When I'm fast-forwarding, it just like looks so comical now to me and sad. So. But that's happening this week. I think there were a lot of rumors and spoilers out there that we've talked on here before about, you know, the various scenarios of how this, you know, stunt romance would play out. You know, she would get her memory in the middle of sex and kill Todd or whatever. But no, they're having sex and they're still, she's going to start finding out what he did to her, but not at that moment. So,
much of this is spurred by the fact that there's been a lot of rumors about the possibility that this is Ron's doing. And, I mean, we've discussed it on the podcast. I think Jamie at some point conjectured that he thought Ron was being held hostage somewhere. What's the word on that?
Well, you know, when I reviewed the tardy romance at first, I did throw Ron a bone. I really couldn't believe that he would do this and then he would write it this way, certainly. But I could never really sort of put my finger on if it was, you know, he had just gone apeshit crazy, the Emmy got to his head, he was scared about losing his job because of Gary Tomlin and decided to go for, you know, pull a Gloria Monty, you know, essentially. But, you know, my sources, I've had actors call me and defend Ron, and, you know, it all has Brian Franz's writing on it. And I'm hearing this from more and more and more people, and that this was Brian Franz's idea. And he's just trying to do it the best way he can, like the amnesia threat. I think he thought, well, maybe this is the way to sell it. So, yeah, and the actors are really upset. The actors I talked to, they're seeing what's happening. I think they were in denial when this was starting to air and this was all coming out and we all went apeshit. But now they're seeing what's, you know, Ron's, you know, doesn't have any autonomy, and he's kind of, once again, Brian is peeing on the trees, and he's been infamous for doing it at GH. I guess we all started raving about One Life to Live, and Ron got the Emmy, and he's like, well, see, if there were Emmy awards for these stupid executives, they would leave the shows alone, because they just want the glory. You know, they're in every goddamn magazine. I know for a fact an executive called Soap Digest and asked to do a feature on herself. I mean, what? I mean, don't you have a job to do? And I think if they had Emmy Awards for, you know, Best Chief, they would actually then do their job and try to win the Emmy. And so I'm just going to go and proclaim All My Children the best damn soap opera that ever aired. Chuck Pratt is a genius. So go, you know, go pee on the trees over there for a change, Mr. Franz, because I'm over it.
Tina, what's your take on the Todd and Marty discussion? I know we discussed it at length last time, but with the possibility that Franz's hands are all over this, what's your take on it?
Possibility? Oh, no. You can tell that this isn't coming out of the writers. All you need to do is watch the promos and the PR spin. Half the promos that air have no basis and what's actually going on the show. I know that earlier this year they did a fall preview, and they spliced Jessica in with scenes with Antonio and Christian's, like she was going to have a new love. And, you know, it was all full of crap. I mean, we haven't seen it on screen. But, you know, the Marty and Todd stuff has been, you know, promoted. It's what we see on screen. Someone has to be directing that because, you know, for the most part, even the actors and writers, they have no clue what the promo department's doing. I mean, that much is made plainly obvious by half the promos that come out. They're very misleading. And where this has not been misleading just leads me to believe that there is someone who is directing all of this. The writers, the PR, the actors, and, you know, that can only come from someone like Franz. So, yes, this is all on his head, if you ask me.
Jamie, I have a two-part question to ask you about. The first is the fact that, and this may be the more minor fact, One Life to Live is going to be bringing back the one-day or the next-day promos at the end of the show for an upcoming storyline. In addition to that, they're also going to be running a public service announcement, which Nelson revealed in his column at TV Guide Canada. Is a public service announcement enough to discount what they're doing with Todd and Marty?
No, of course not. It's a good, I mean, it's a good step, of course, if they have someone on there to say. But basically, what can you say? Sorry, rape victims, if this offends you, it's just for soap opera. Disregard all of our history of being socially relevant and just come along for the ride. I think it's ridiculous, but I feel a little bad as, you know, a aspiring writer myself, because I mean this year has taught me nothing. If this year has taught me nothing, is it's that you could be the second coming of Shakespeare in daytime and you're not going to be allowed to write a show, and that's sad, because I mean it never really made sense that Ron had such a brilliant year, you know, pre-strike, and then, you know, I never really, like I said, I felt like some passions writer had kidnapped him and, you know, was holding him hostage and had allowed witches and midgets to start writing the show. But I know that's not the case. And we've all said it. I mean, you can just see, I mean, this reeks of GH back in the old days when, you know, or even, you know, in a lot of ways now, but it's, yeah, I mean, it reeks of exploitation, and whereas I didn't really mind that with mob storylines, you know, the story you thought we'd never tell, but it is so garish and reprehensible in an industry that is supposedly aimed at women to exploit a rape storyline. And we have, you know, and I will give them this, you know, we posted about it this week. There are a ton of tardy fans.
Let's not dignify this couple with a squish name. Love squish names. Let's not dignify them.
But I want to go ahead and put it out there that they do have their fans. We've seen that, you know, it shocks you, but you know, these people make the point that it's no different than these other rape storylines, the EJ and Sammy and Roger and Holly and Luke and Laura. But there are differences. We all know that there are differences. And but I don't slam any fan for that, because soaps, a lot of times it's just about a visceral reaction. There are two attractive people. They're sexy together. And it benefits from the fact that this is not the same actor who was playing the part when the rape took place, I believe. But I'm not even going to say about, because fans can like anything. I'm laying the responsibility at the executive level. This is Disney, for God's sakes. What kind of messages? I mean, it really makes it stupid. Don't do PSAs. Don't do Jackie Zeman doing those commercials talking about talk it over soaps. If you're only going to be about entertainment and wanting shock value, then don't even pretend that you're trying to educate in any way, shape, or form, because this is horrible and horrendous, and they know it is. And this is Agnes Nixon's show, and each one of these writers had their own identity, the great writers, you know, and Agnes Nixon was the writer who gave a socially relevant soap opera, you know, followed by Claire Levine. So it is garish, reprehensible, and irresponsible for them to make a romance out of a rape storyline. It's ridiculous, and there is no way it's in any way, shape, or form redeemable. It is a jump the shark moment, and I'm really glad to find out that it is not exactly something that the writers created. I mean, you know, and why an executive would assume that this would be entertaining boggles my mind.
Nelson, in your column on the Suds Report at TV Guide Canada, you reported the fact that you were the one who alerted RAIN, which represents Rape, Abuse, Incest National Network, to the fact that this was taking place. Is this PSA just basically a whitewashing of the storyline, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. When I called RAIN, I had every, like, assumption that when I sort of contacted them, I was going to call and just see, like, did you disapprove the story from RAIN's point of view? Like, I wanted to know, like, what RAIN thought of this. Because, I mean, someone tries to fix, like, Reva will fix her faucet on Guiding Light, and, you know, the writers will contact them from, you know, someone from Home Hardware, you know, and have them endorse the storyline and have them involved. So I was, like, shocked that they didn't call RAIN, like, saying, well, this is going to be... It was almost like they were trying to, like, you know, sweep this under the rug as quiet as possible, and for some, you know, some miracle would happen, we'd fall for the couple, and no one would care. So they were shocked. I was shocked. I mean, Bold and Beautiful was last show to call them for Brooke's rape. So and they worked with them, you know, very intimately over the story and the setup and the shower stuff and doing PSAs and all that stuff. So I was shocked that ABC didn't do it. So I guess I didn't know this, but RAIN ran immediately to ABC. And I guess I don't know what those conversations, you know, what was said in those conversations, but, you know, the outcome was, you know, they demanded a PSA and they're airing it on the day of Marty and Todd having sex, this Thursday. I think they had no choice but to do it. It's a nice gesture, I guess. You know, I think Brian Fawn should be fired. You know, this is Barbara Bloom's greatest gift. You know, I have a new public enemy, and it's, this industry is not going to save itself if writers aren't allowed to write what they want. And it's really hard to finger point when there's so many cooks in the kitchen. Brian can say, well, Ryan wrote it. Or say, Ron, yeah, Ron wrote it, and then Ron can say, I was forced to. So there's no accountability. You know, there's so many fingerprints on this mess, this obscene mess, that, you know, I don't know how it will impact One Life to Live's future. I, you know, the show has jumped the shark. We always use, you know, the term jumping the shark, but Jamie's completely right. I mean, it doesn't resonate for me anymore at all, and I'm just glad I have Young and the Restless because, you know, Brian let Ron write his show. I did the worst thing before this podcast. I shouldn't have done it. I watched 5 back-to-back YNRs in a row because they're so good, I save them for, like, Sunday night. I watch them all in a row, like my Sex and the City DVDs. You know, I want them one after another. The problem is that show is so good now. I almost had a heart attack watching it this week because it was so beautiful, and it just made me think, oh, I got to do this my One Life to Live podcast now. I'm like, damn it, if they just let Brian write this show, we would have 2 soap operas right now that were fierce, and they battle it out. Like, I want 2 head writers to, like, compete against each other pen to pen, not, like, C-list casting, you know. You know, so who cares about the casting? Just write. I want Ron to go, I'm going to out Maria Arena Bell her, and vice versa. And then you have a real healthy competition. And so it just even depresses me further. And it only seems that we can have only one great soap opera at a time. Last year it was One Life to Live. Now it's YNR. And so I don't know how I feel. It's just, you know, I don't care about the couple anymore. And Todd's been ruined to me, even though Trevor St. John has never looked more handsome. I think those girls, or, you know, they're not really resisting the storyline, which is kind of shocking to me. I thought that you'd maybe see them resist it on screen. But there are a couple tardy fans out there, and the reason why I use that squish name is because tardy just perfectly defines that couple to me. So I love kind of using it. But they're like 12, 14-year-old girls, and you can tell in the way they write letters to TV Guide or online that they're really young. And that's the dangerous part, is that they're falling for this because they didn't see One Life to Live, you know, 3 years ago, let alone 20 years ago. And they're teens. So,
Jamie, Nelson mentioned earlier the fact that he thought that Brian Franz needed to step down. We've discussed at length on this podcast on various occasions the possibility that he might be the only person to be able to save it because of his work with SoapNet and various other things. If he were to step down, do you think that there would be any marked improvement at the ABC soaps, or would it not matter because the new person who came in would basically do the exact same thing.
Well, this is the thing. This is where I've given Franz praise or an out, is that he's the only executive that seemed to be spending money to try to keep Daytime going. But that good cannot cancel out a multitude of evils. If he really wanted to improve Daytime, he would hire, and he has with Ron, talented writers and allow them to write the damn shows. He's not a writer. He's an executive. He shouldn't be writing the shows. He shouldn't be mandating to writers who should be played because of focus groups and other statistical Lean Six Sigma bullshit, because that's not how soap operas are done. That's not how they've ever been done when it was good, and that's what will – I mean, it's really a sad Greek tragedy that, yes, he's spending money to try to save the genre, but he will cripple it because at the end of the day, soaps are about – good story. They will never be able to do CGI as good as Primetime. They will never be able to tell those 24-esque storylines as good as Primetime in film. So they should stop and do like Melissa Reeves said when she was about to leave Days because she was so frustrated. Soaps should do what they do best, which is character-driven storytelling. And until he allows them to do that, you can spend $8 million and get Madonna to come in and say she's got her something, and it's not going to save the industry.
Now, Tina, Jamie mentioned focus groups. There's been a lot of rumors about both One Life to Live and as well as the other two ABC soaps and the impact that focus groups are having on what's taking place on and behind the scenes at the moment. What's your take on the fact that they are so heavily relying on these focus groups that don't seem to be making any sense whatsoever?
Various people have come out and discussed various things about focus groups. And number one, most of the people in these focus groups are paid to be in the focus groups. They're screened to be in these focus groups. I don't think that there is an audience more skewed when they sit them down to show them something than a focus group. If they truly want to get information from true focus groups, they need to do much more random sampling, because they're not taking a random sampling of the audience. They're taking these people that come in and present themselves, you know, and are accepting for a lot of the money for their views on a particular soap. Well, how is that impartial? It's not.
Jamie, before we get to General Hospital and the fact that it's now seventh in the rankings, and I'm sure they'll be churning out a focus group to try and figure out how to get it back up, what's your take on the focus groups?
Focus groups, I didn't even really know what that term meant in soap opera until Jill Farren Phelps used them to Kill Another World. Focus groups told her that they needed to kill off one of their 30-something heroines. At first, it was going to be either Paulina Corey or Frankie Frame, two of the most popular heroines in the history of the show. Then when it broke out that she might consider killing Donna Love, the fans revolted and she killed Frankie. And it was the beginning of the end of the show. She went on to kill Ryan Harrison and all of the other main characters that people love just about, stripping it to the bare bones because of focus groups. It doesn't make any sense. Focus groups are killing Daytime. You know, I mean, this is the only industry where you can wreck a show and then take your wares somewhere else and be allowed to wreck another show. And I'm not really slamming Jill now because I like GH, but I do think that that type of thinking is running amok at ABC. I think we're getting all this CGI and all this crap and this nobody paying attention to storylines because of focus groups, because they're running these shows not like an art form, like it started out with playwrights writing for television, but now they're running it like a business meeting. And all you have to do is look at Wall Street and you find out that these people can't run big corporations either. So why don't they just let the playwrights write the show?
Nelson, how many business meetings and focus groups will it take to save General Hospital from sinking below Guiding Light? At this point, there is only a matter of approximately 500,000 viewers between them in last week's ratings. It's down 355,000 viewers from last year, and it's down 64,000 from last week.
How many focus groups?
How many focus groups and business meetings?
I think they've had all the focus groups, you know, they can set up and meetings. I think I heard rumblings that Bob Boozer has been in trouble since, I guess, the summer, because obviously that's when Brian Franz went over to One Life to Live. I bet you he plays these head writers like, now sit here, Bob. Here's a cookie and here's a big glass of milk. You're my favorite head writer. Daddy loves you. Oh, Ron. Ron just scored a touchdown. Ron, you're my favorite now. Pet, pet, pet. Let me help you with that pen. Yeah, let me help you with your homework. And so now I think Bob's on, you know, not necessarily his shit list, but I think, you know, he's not the favorite child anymore. So I think that's why I think I've seen GH improve a lot, especially in the last 2 weeks, around the time when Lisa came on the show. And so this is just an unhealthy, dysfunctional family behavior that, you know, won't be remedied until the parent is, you know, scurried off to Statesville. So if someone comes in. So I think the great side effect of that is I think Bob's writing a lot better because he's scared. So I know they may have given him to the winter to improve. I think that's why he pulled that big November, no one's ever done this crap before, and I'm the smartest head writer in the world because I watch a lot of film and TV at night. So I think he's holding it on purpose. I think he wants to know if he's going to stay until February, into the next cycle, before he pulls that off. Now, of course, the ratings going down, that may have been reason enough for Braun to say, well, you stupid idiot, if you had done the story in November, maybe we could bounce back from this drop. I mean, maybe this drop is momentary, like, you know, just, you know, daytime rebounds every week. So I think it's pretty bleak. I think that's why I'm refocusing all my attentions towards Y&R and shows like Night Shift. You know, Brian does, you know, Brian did promote Ron and he hired Shree. It's just like, I think he's like Gene Panasante, and he has a split personality too. I think when he's not, you know, controlling something, the shows that he's not paying attention to actually flourish. Well, so that's why I want his attention on all my children now. Look, it went up 200,000 viewers because of the tornado. You know, not really. I think it's because, you know, Eden came back. But I want him to be now screw with all my children. And I bet you Chuck Pratt and Brian Franz, I think, are very similar storytellers. So I think they'll get along perfectly. What can we blow up next month? You know, let Ron write the show.
Well, I have a question that may end up turning into fighting words between Tina and Jamie. So, and I'm posing to this to you both. But for years now, fans are longtime General Hospital fans have been clamoring for less mob related storylines. Then there have been fans like Jamie who have loved the mob storylines, and for most of, well, the last couple years, it seems like there's been a very slow decline of mob. It's still been very dominant, but it's been substantially less than it used to be. But when you take a look at, and this is instant reaction, this is not necessarily a trend or anything like that, but this is just instant reaction. If you look at the fact that you have Laura coming back, and you have the return of Anthony Geary, and you have all of these things happening that are supposedly what we the fans want, who either are like longtime people like Tina or people like myself who are newer viewers but hate the mob, and the ratings dip, Tina, is there an argument for needing more mob on General Hospital? And then I'm going to pose the same question to Jamie.
All right, here's the thing. Yes, people have been clamoring for years that they want a return to real storytelling and not just the shoot 'em up, blow 'em up stuff that we've gotten from the mob. This is what's happened. Over the years, all we've gotten the last couple years is Guza's version of Port Charles, where he blows something up, shoots something up, kills people. In fact, not too long ago, someone was telling me, I believe he's killed more characters during his tenure on GH than anybody else.
Yeah, I think someone said the average is what, like six a year?
Yes, I believe it's 36 characters that he's killed. Somebody
told
me 6 years.
Yeah.
Not that anyone's counting or anything.
Oh, please. People are always counting. What's happened is that the fans that wanted this storytelling a lot of them have left the soap and they're not coming back because they are so sick of seeing everything. And I'm sorry, for a lot of people, for as long as Sonny Corinthos is on that screen, they're never going to come back. Although I'm sure if you started promoting for 2 weeks ahead of time that Sonny was going to die, you'd probably see a huge spike in ratings for the day that he dies. Because a lot of people directly correlate the, you know, downslide of GH so deeply into the mob with, you know, Sonny Corinthos. But in the end, at this point, you have people like Jamie who, you know, love this mobular General Hospital. You know what? Give it to them and just give us Night Shift instead.
So, Jamie, is there any point in trying to lure back the old-time viewers, or is it a matter of they've given it an honest effort to try and cater to the fans who don't want as much mob? It's not working, or in quote-unquote, and it should be mob 24/7.
Well, I've never thought it should be mob 24/7, and I love GH for a lot of other different reasons. I love Maxie and Spinelli. I love Kate. I love the Quartermains. I think a lot of times what happens online, especially, that people try to act like it's an either-or. It is possible to like both sides of General Hospital. I love mob stories. I've always loved mob stories. I love mob stories in every form of fiction, but I like good mob stories, and GH doesn't have a good mob story now, and they haven't had one in a year. I don't even care about Karpov. I don't even know who Karpov is. You know, I'm loving Scrubs, and I'm loving, you know, I love Sonny. Sonny's one of my favorite characters, but the mob storyline is so weak right now because it's just a revolving door. You know, we didn't even get
how many mobsters
cars.
Have they had? They've had like five different temporary mobsters over the summer alone, haven't they?
Yeah, and well, that's the thing. It's like, I like a well-plotted, this is, you know, yeah, I love character-driven story, but I need the mob stories to have some plot that, and what they could do, and me and Nelson talked about this one time, and I said this, I wrote a blog about this. I want them to if Bob Guza really wants to get it, he will realize that this mob storyline could be awesome if it was told from the point of view of a woman. They really missed the boat with Claudia Zakara. They brought Sarah Brown on. I was like peeing my pants because those promos made it like she was going to be Lucky Santangelo from the Jackie Collins novels about the mob, Lady Boss and Chances and Lucky.
Yep.
That would hook women. If the woman was in charge, if Guza could get over his all the women are sluts and all the men are bad guys that break glass at women's feet and let the woman take over the mob. I mean, how many people still talk about the day that Carly took on the five families? It's a woman's genre and they won't write for women. I think that's the one thing that has happened in daytime in the last couple of years. It's, you know, especially with GH, it's so testosterone heavy. And this is still a genre aimed at women. I love it. We love it. We're guys. But I'm just saying, it's aimed at women. I mean, write it. No woman wants to be portrayed. I mean, yeah. I mean, there needs to be rounded. I mean, yeah, there needs to be fleshed out characters. But every woman on GH can't be a slut. I mean, it's like every third woman is portrayed as a slut. And
no,
I'm a fan of the show.
Madonna or a whore. That's all they are. They're a Madonna or a whore.
And that's either or storytelling. Now, I do love this show. I watch it every day, and I am a fan of it, and I think it's a lot better than a lot of these other shows. You know, I think it's better than One Life to Live. But the thing of it is, I'm not going to give them a pass about what they've done with their vets either, because it's exploitive. I know, you know, I didn't grow up watching the character of Anna Devane, but I saw her on All My Children, and I've read. This is not – they haven't brought Anna Devane. They brought her back on Night Shift, but they haven't brought Anna Devane back.
Nope.
I'm not buying it. They brought these characters back and they made them buffoons so that they could say, look, we tried. But no, I don't believe for 1 minute that Robert was just an idiot who came back to make pot shots during monkey flu, or that Anna was a love-struck groupie, or that Holly was a one-dimensional Betty Boop vamp. I mean, they brought these characters back to pimp them out. And, you know, that's the sad irony. When do they bring them back? Sweeps. Guess what that means? They raise ratings. So why not just put them on contract and integrate them into the storyline? I think they could cover a multitude of evils if they brought Anna back and made her take on the mob. and actually give the people who don't like the mob a realistic, rootable heroine who doesn't like them and tries to take them down. Not Durant or Scotty or Alexis, who is bribing people and killing people herself, but principled heroes that GH, you know, from what I've read, that's what they had in the past, that are trying to take Sonny down and take the mob down instead of making it Uncle Mac eating donuts and Lucky being the dumbest cop in the history of daytime television. Give them, I mean, meet them halfway. Give the, put the heroes back to take down them a new WSB task force against the mob, and pit the two sides against the other, and then play the comedy with Diane and Spinelli and Alexis. You might have a more rounded out show that you don't have to worry about when Vanessa Marcel books a reality show or if Jeannie Francis can come back this month.
Nelson?
Well, oh my God, you know, Bob Guza is on his knees in front of Marcel Manor. Vanessa!
Yeah,
Vanessa! Open the door, please! I need you. You're my only hope.
As a mob
Vanessa!
Fan, I have to say,
and then
Jeannie
Vanessa Marcel
the
picks up
bit.
Her phone and says, security.
Yeah.
Like, he's, you know, I thought about what you just said, Jamie, right now, and I was watching my five YNRs back to back, and I saw the most iconic moment. First of all, let me say, Megan McTavish was the worst person on bringing anyone back from the dead. She screwed it up over and over, from Eva LaRue to like everyone on that show, even Eden. And now Bob Guza is the worst person. He can't bring back a fan favorite, which should really be the easiest thing for a head writer to do. I mean, it's a spectacular moment. It's a payoff for fans. And you get to cook up all this new, juicy, forward story while, you know, focusing and mining it in the past. Brilliant. It should always work. And YNR did it with Eileen Davidson. To have the Nikki call Ashley to help Victor and find Victor because the FBI is watching her and no one will listen to Nikki. She had to, like, convince Ashley and convince of Victor's love for her rival for her to go find Victor in Paris. And I was like, wow, that's something like, I've never said this before, that Bill Bell would have written that. And it was so iconic, these two rivals coming together and putting aside their differences to help the man they love. And Bob Guza just, you know, gets a great star to come back, and he doesn't know, he just, like, kind of slaps him against the wall, you know, with no glue. And
it's ABC overall. I mean, they did it with, they're doing it with Andrea Evans.
They did it with Katie McClain. They've done it with countless numbers. I mean, of people. But I have a question for you, Nelson. Could they really make Anna a WSB person now when she's in the process of basically becoming a prop to her daughter? Because they had a wonderful almost wedding, but at this last week. And what's your reaction to the wedding? And do you think that they could actually turn Anna into a viable character at this point?
No, they can't turn Anna into anything. They can't turn anything on
they
that
can
show
turn into her into because, a viable character at any point in time.
Because Bob Guza is writing. So, like, I can't answer this question. It doesn't matter about focus groups. They need to fire Bob Guza. I mean, if we were talking about Sri Rao writing the show, I'd weigh in because there's possibilities there. Anything's possible with Sri.
Well, and it may also have something to do with their schedule, too, potentially.
That's the cop-out that they use. I cannot believe that doing those little six-week style shows would really prevent Finola Hughes from re-signing a contract. I mean, come on. Victoria Rao did movies and was on two shows at one time. They could work around her doing, does your butt look big in these pants? I'm sorry, but they could.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, but I definitely think that not only would they work around it, she would work around them if she had a storyline worth a damn. You know, I think that she sees the scripts and she's like, why should I bend over backwards or adjust my schedule for this crap?
Well, we're going to give Tina the final word on General Hospital before we move on to All My Children. Nelson, you did an interview with Eden Riegel and Tamara Braun, and you asked some very probing questions, including who was the better kisser? Tell us about that.
I love to probe my imaginary lesbians. It's funny, I talked to Elizabeth Hendrickson the day before I spoke to Reese and Binks, Real Life Portrayers, and I asked, Liz, I said, well, who is the better kisser, Eden or Daniel Goddard? And then she went, wait a minute, I haven't kissed anyone on the show in 6 months since I've been here, and I'm pregnant and married. So, but she said, if I had kissed anyone, Eden will always be, forever remain, the best kisser I've ever had professionally. So then, of course, I threw that at Eden with Tamara right on the line, and I'm like, who's the better kisser, Tamara or Eden? And Eden refused to answer the question. Refused, and then Tamara just picked up the tape recorder, or sorry, the phone, and said, me, I'm the best kisser she'll ever have, and she'll never have another on-screen love interest other than me. So the good news is Tamara's really happy to be on the show. She's actually playing a real character. So she was over the moon. She was infectious, and Eden's very happy as well. She had some concerns about the story. She echoed mine. Just that, the relationship took place off camera, of course, they're saying that, it had to happen that way because we're only here for 4 months. But then, of course, the other ABC-inspired, beat that's always missed is, why didn't Eden Bianca tell Erica she was 9 months pregnant and not tell her sister? So Eden's very concerned about Kendall and Bianca's relationship, and she wants the writers to explain that to her herself, like the actress.
But will there even be time? Will there even be time for that story to be explained on screen if she's only around for 4 months? And
I don't know if they're going to play that beat. I mean, Eden didn't say that was definite. She said that, I hope they do. I'm sure Chuck will address it in 2 episodes before Tsunami hits the show. But I asked them. I guess what you're asking, Luke, is like, are they going to stay a little longer? And they said it's up in the air. I don't believe Eden. I think Eden's going to leave. And our Tamara's really happy, and she seems like she wants to stay, and she wants to build this couple up. But she's really, really, like, on board with the storyline. And it's really nice to see an actor actually, inspired. So if Eden left, I'd keep Reese. I'd absorb her, because there's no need to lose both of them.
The other thing that you had news to break is the fact that you didn't interview with Cameron Matheson. Tell us briefly about that.
Yeah, we talked for a bit, and he said that his contract's up, and no one's approached him yet. And, he was sad to see Becky leave, but he confirmed to me what, I've known for half a year, that, Becky only came back for a year. I mean, this was because of the writer's strike. So that's why, I think everyone's sources, sounded the same, because she was telling everyone that she was out. And that was her intention. Nothing was going to change her mind. Of course, Brian, through everything, including the White House, out of her for, to stay, because she is the greatest actress in the world, and Luke Care's favorite. But he wants to stay on All My Children. Cameron does, but he's no one's approached him. He's got 3 story meetings.
Let me just back up and clarify something. When you say that no one's approached him, are you saying that the people at All My Children have not approached him about staying, or are you saying that people from other networks or primetime opportunities have not approached him with other viable options should he decide to leave?
No one from ABC Daytime has approached him, but that I didn't think that he was. It hasn't. It's probably not time yet, I guess. But I mean, it's probably like any day now, someone will call, or maybe they think someone like Cameron will stay, and they don't even have to, woo him. He said that, he would like to stay on All My Children forever. However, he had a very difficult year story wise, and I said, some people. I'm against actors having story input. This didn't make it into the interview, but I said I think Cameron Matheson needs story input in his contract, because they just saddle you with one bad storyline, one train wreck of a love interest every single year. Maybe you actually should negotiate story input in your contract. And he was like, I'm doing my new Good Morning America entertainment correspondent spot. I'm hosting like 500 reality TV shows, and he still has the Dancing with the Dancing with the Stars fame to ride on. So he said, I'm keeping my options open, and he's never said that to me before. He's always been rah, 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 sign on with the show, I'll never do another soap. But, it's for the first time I think we're seeing shitty material really scare actors away, like Tina was saying. I mean, just write it and they'll come. I mean, Tristan Rogers has got the huge storyline in his career, and he wants to do more of it. He's like, I'll take a pay cut. Just give me more of that on GH.
I just want to ask something, because Tina pointed out in a previous ABC podcast that if Cameron Matheson were to leave, this would be the time because he's riding a crest of recognition. And if he doesn't take the opportunity now, he might be stuck here forever. Tina, what's your thoughts on the possibility of Ryan leaving All My Children?
Leave. Leave. Go. Go now. Run. Don't walk. Don't come back.
Okay. Jamie, what kind of impact would Cameron Matheson have if he chose to leave on the show? How would that realign things?
Well, since they're ending Super Soap, a lot of women with I Want to Hump Ryan Lavery t-shirts wouldn't have any reason to go for the tours coming to a ball near you. But I love Cameron. I love him as a host more than I do an actor. That's not a slam against him as an actor, because I loved Ryan, the character, when he first started, when he was a grifter and a con. And I loved him with Jillian, and I loved him with...
He and Jillian were amazing.
I loved him with Kendall, too. Now, if they put him with Kendall, but, you know, again, this AMC, Brian Franz was peeing on trees over there like nobody's business, because he implemented that they had to do. I mean, you can just see it. The whole Ryan Greenlee forced thing. They have the chemistry of two amoebas, you know, slugged up against each other. They have no sexual chemistry. It's great, you know, that they're best friends in real life and whatever, but the characters should never have been together. I mean, poor Rebecca Budig. This was like when Marcy Walker left Santa Barbara and they couldn't do anything with A. Martinez. You know, when Josh left, she should have just left too, because they haven't been able to do anything with Greenlee. You know, they tried to turn her into a heroine. I mean, they could have kept her a super bitch.
They could have turned her into an uber bitch and had her and Erica go toe-to-toe, and it would have been awesome.
Well, I know that's your fantasy, but I want Brooke against Erica. I don't.
Well,
Erica,
I do too, but I want Brooke versus Erica, but I'm just looking at what...
Greenlee's not ready for Erica. It's like when Donna Mills told Nicolette Sheridan on Knots Landing, on an Abby scale, you're a 7. She's not ready for Erica yet. But, you know,
ouch.
She's not. I'm sorry.
Personally, I think Greenlee should have gone up against Erica, not made it against Erica, and then just been trained by Erica. And it should have ended there. Her and Kendall should never have become best buddies.
Yeah, that totally agrees with you there. Well, I want to just
I want to weigh in first, Luke, before you go on the whole my thoughts on, and I know Tina might have some thoughts too on, Bianca and Reese. Everybody knows Tamara Braun is one of my favorite heroines. If she came back to General Hospital, I would go ape shit. But they're the only reasons that I like watch that storyline, because All My Children, we talk a lot about One Life to Live, we talk a lot about GH, we talk a lot about Guiding Light. I have to say unequivocally on this podcast right now, All My Children is the worst show in daytime. That tornado and all that other crap is just hideous. I think that show is unwatchable. I would rather watch Guiding Light than All My Children right now. And I gave Chuck a pass when we first found out that he was coming, because I was like, well, he did a lot of other stuff I liked, but it's not even a soap opera. It's almost like Days of Our Lives. It's just a lot of people walking around doing stuff you don't expect them to do. Like, you know, why would Crystal yell at Opal because her tarot cards didn't tell her that Babe was going to die? Nobody even believes in Opal's tarot cards. None of it makes sense. It's just, it's horrible. All My Children is horrible. That's where Fran needs to focus his attention.
And that's what I wanted to ask.
And utterly unwatchable.
And that's what I wanted to ask.
Jamie didn't mean what he said. Brian Franz, All My Children is the best show on daytime,
right.
And it's going to win a million writing awards.
Jamie is warming up to All My Children.
No. All right, let's put it this way. The tornado episodes in and of themselves were so beautifully written that they're going to win the Emmy next year.
Yes,
so
therefore,
you know, Brian, this is the soap you want to concentrate on. Please.
Yes.
Well,
how you have to speak their language in order to get through to them. And
Brian,
that's exactly
I, wait,
wait, wait, wait, wait. Ratings were up. 237 from the previous week and up 207 from the previous week last year, in part because of this debacle that we apparently all tuned in for.
There are 200,000 lesbians out there that turned off all my children when Eden left.
Yep.
Those dykes and black sweaters are watching all my children now, and so am I.
Yes.
Anybody will tune in for a disaster storyline. That's no reason to give the man the keys to Disneyland.
I didn't say anything about giving keys. I was just saying, and
he also has brought back. He also has four superstars on at one time: Gus and Harley, and now Eden and Tamara.
Gus Harley,
but I mean, well, that's who they are. They're Gus and Harley with better lighting, but. I have never had so many of my favorites on one show and not want to watch it. Luke, I don't know if you remember, but I used to get crucified because of my Tamara love. I mean, that is my girl. That's my Carly Corinthos with her baseball bat. But it is painful for me to watch this show. It is dreadful. I mean, I'm sorry, Ray. It's wonderful, Brian Franz. You need to get over there and give him some help.
The storyline is pretty beautiful, and she wouldn't come back if she didn't, you know, she couldn't put her name on it. Of course, that can change. But she did say that there is no kissing ban. They kiss as much as they want. They're intimate. They hug. No one has a problem with Reese. No one cares if she's having, a baby, out of wedlock, per se. And they proposed and got engaged. So she says this is a pretty good storyline. So there's no nuke ban on this. I was worried because when they... First, I thought, well, according to all my children, if your 9-month pregnant lover, is trampled by a house and then has to give birth and almost died with all her relatives, that you would, hug and kiss her and hold on to her dear life. And they said, Eden said that there was a kiss written in the script, but they decided to make it more tender, and then they kissed later at the episode. So ABC won't be pulling PNG. And so that is kind of making me interested, because this is really no... gay couple's gone to engagement, so the engagement level, and I don't think Chuck Pratt is smart enough to write this, but in Canada, gays can get married, and of course we're finding out now that you divorce and you have to fight for custody of your children, and it would be really interesting because if they were to break up and go to court for this baby,
they aren't even married yet.
What's that?
You're already divorcing him, and they're not even married yet.
Well, that's what Tamara said. Tamara started laughing. She goes, you're negative Nelly. I'm going to call you negative Nelly. And I laughed, and I said, no, I'm thinking. I had my head writing in my head. But I'm saying there is an opportunity to do something really political and turn a custody case into, this moral issue. Who, just because you gave birth to a baby, does that make you any less a mother? And it's... The gay courts are finding this now because it's sex going up against each other. But anyway,
the judges are very fashionable.
I was looking at Canadian judges, but...
It's not just Canada. Here in Massachusetts is a whole new industry. There's a whole bunch of new lawyers. All they do is what they call gay law. It's gay marriage, gay divorce, gay custody, gay alimony. It's everywhere here in Massachusetts.
Oh, well, if I was writing the show, I'd bring Maggie back, slap Bianca in the head, and go, what are you doing with this Parisian bitch who used to hang out with mobsters? Let's take this baby away. And you have this great custody battle, and you can get rid of Eden.
I'm sorry, but I want Elizabeth Hendrickson, as much as I love her as Maggie and Frankie, I want her to stay exactly where she's at.
Oh, I would recast in a second. Elizabeth Mitchell told me. Elizabeth Hendrickson... said that she was down Y&R forever, that they would have to kick her out.
Okay.
And she wants Black Girl Davis. But she wouldn't mind Eden on Y&R. And my interview this coming week, she'll reveal which role she wants to play.
Well, Jamie and I were talking about that possibility the other night on the phone, and I think that Jamie suggested that she be cast as Mac.
Yeah, that's what Elizabeth thinks, we all think. And then they could be kind of rivals.
Praying for. I pray that anybody I love gets off those PNG shows and all my children pronto.
Well,
if Susan Lucci could find another soap, I'd be happy.
Oh, if I was Catherine Hicklin, I'd be calling my agent, go get me on Y&R now. Now, now, now. I'll play Tawny if Andrea Evans is too stupid to play it.
Well, on that note, we are going to go to our final thoughts. Tina, on Instant Messenger, you had something that makes an excellent final thought. What is that?
Well, Jamie, when he was going on his little rant about the mob and what they do with women, I kind of cut in with the little Madonna whore thing, and I didn't get to finish it because you guys were all talking over me. Sure. So what I wanted to say was that G.H. tried to go there once with a female mobster. Her name was Faith Roscoe.
Love
and
her.
And most fans, you will find, to this day, want her to come back. We loved her. And then, of course, they just, you know, they couldn't deal with her being in power and they had to destroy her. But, you know, it can be done. It can be written. You know what? Guza can write it if he really wants to. He just doesn't.
Jamie, what's your final thought?
If Faith hadn't been taken down, I would have nothing to have orgasmic thoughts to because of that awesome scene with Jason busting in and shooting those guns at her. That's like the most orgasmic scene in the history of daytime television. So, bye, Faith!
Okay. Nelson, do we even want to know what your most orgasmic scene in daytime ever was for your final thought?
Oh, seeing Tom Christopher in bed with Kevin Spears on One Night to Live. That was
I just
vomited
a little in my mouth.
What's that? So what did you say?
I just vomited a little in my mouth.
Oh, my God. No, the most orgasmic scene that I think I'll ever probably see will be this Thursday when the rapist rapes his rape victim again. It's going to be more magical than ever, and Disney's going to have a ride. You know, the rapist deal. Come on in. Any age, welcome. Come on in. Free rape.
The
free rape.
The Rape Mance of Rape View.
But
Rape Mance,
I think
the
if
musical.
Anyone, my final thought is I think if anyone wants superior acting, amazing organic, character-driven writing, great sets, location shoots, superstar epics, romantic couplings, watch Y&R.
No, this is an ABC podcast. Will you shut up with the Y&R love already?
Nelson.
But if you like, you have to, we got to give them the whole thing. But if you don't like annoying little girls.
I was just going to say.
They've got their Achilles heel and her name is Eden. And that little singing thing. They didn't get them off.
Yeah,
there.
At least they're little just minor mistakes.
Did you notice how much
minor.
She
they're
said Ashram this last week? She said Ashram like 30 times a day.
Stop the Y&R talk.
I wish somebody would bury her in a, I don't know, in some ashes.
I'll take her over a rape man's any day, though.
I don't know. Because
I can just fast forward through the twit, the waste of space twit that she is. And get you to an acting class. Jesus.
I sure love Todd's
Crystal
penthouse.
Crystal Strauss
though.
Look like Meryl Streep.
I bet Kip Zimmer watches the episodes of One Life to Live and looks at Todd's penthouse and wants to cry. I bet all the godlike actors just want to cry because those sets on One Life to Live are so nice.
Okay.
My final thought.
I hope Soap Opera Digest stops doing these flashback features in their magazine. Because I'm starting to see all these old Guiding Light sets and these epic productions, and I just start crying inside. I'm like, no! Stop printing the 70s picture of Eileen Fulton getting into a limo. I can't deal with it.
Okay, my final thought is this. Jamie pointed out earlier that, in his opinion, All My Children was the worst soap on air. While I do not agree with that, I believe that title, personally, in my opinion, is held by a CBS soap. I will agree that it is the worst of the three ABC soaps and is in the running for the bottom.
Why can't you just say which one you think it is, Barbara Walters?
But at the same time, I would totally agree with you from the standpoint of it has been unbearable to watch. And I'm the biggest All My Children fan, at least I feel like I am sometimes. But the only thing that's gotten me through the last year or two or three has been the Chandler family. And more recently, Erica and Adam's interactions, because the rest of it, I know that everybody watches for something, but there's just not, it's getting to the point where there just isn't enough. And if the reports are true that Robin Christopher might stick around after returning, if she does for Myrtle's funeral, that would be awesome. On that note, we would encourage you to call our comment line by calling 917-677-9757. Leave us your thoughts on this episode, the state of daytime, or any other topic that you may have of interest relating to daytime. Nelson, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, guys. Have a good week.
Tina, Jamie, as always, it's fun.
Boogie boogie.
Yes, until next time, folks. We thank you for listening. So long, folks.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.